I've selected a reading this morning that ties back to my earlier career in oceanography. This is from Gift from the Sea by Anne-Mara Lindbergh. This is from a chapter entitled The Channeled Whelk. A whelk is a spiraling shell with an intriguing geometry. His shell is simple. It's bare. It's beautiful. Its shape winds in a gentle spiral to a pointed apex. Its color is dull gold, whitened by a wash of salt from the sea. Each whorl, each faint knob, each crisscross vein is clearly defined. My eye follows the outer circumference of that winding staircase up which this tenant used to travel. My life shell is not like this. How untidy it has become. Blurred with moss, knobby with barnacles, its shape is hardly recognizable. Surely it had a shape once. The shape of my life today includes a husband, 5 children, a home in the suburbs of New York. The shapes and desires of my life are determined by many things: my background, my education, my conscience and its pressures, my heart and its desires. I want to give to my children and husband, to share with friends and community, to carry out my obligations as an artist, as a woman, as a citizen. But I want, more than these other desires, to be at peace in myself. I want a singleness of eye, a purity of intention, a central core to my life that will enable me to carry out these obligations as well as I can. I want, in other words, to live in grace as much as possible. That's from Anne-Mara Lindbergh. We read in the Hebrew Bible, "You shall not covet your neighbor's house or anything that belongs to your neighbor." Was that really a commandment? Just a suggestion? The first century Roman historian Suetonius wrote the following description of the Emperor Caligula. "In reckless extravagance, he outdid the prodigals of all ages, inventing new sorts of baths and unnatural varieties of food and feasts. He would bathe in hot or cold perfumed oils, drink pearls of great price dissolved in vinegar, and he would set before his guests loaves and meats of gold. He built galleys, ships, with 10 banks of oars, with sterns set with gems, multicolored sails, spacious baths," this was on his ships, "colonnades and banquet halls, and a great variety of vines and fruit trees." Not even Carnival has that now. "Within these vessels, he would feast among singers and dancers as he coasted along the shores of Campania. He built villas and country houses with utter disregard of expense, caring for nothing except to do what was said to be impossible." Thus functioned Mr. Caligula, a compulsive shopper, it would seem. In less than a year, he managed to squander the entire fortune of the Roman Empire, which his predecessor Tiberius had squirreled away for a rainy day. Well, the season of desire is here. I'm intrigued to learn how some religious organizations are in step with the times and offering up some novelty items. Avon Silversmiths in London is selling a gold-plated crucifix about 3.5 inches high at a bargain price of £409 sterling. This crucifix includes a built-in screeching alarm for clergy who are afraid of encountering violence at work. If the wearer of this crucifix were attacked, they are supposed to grab the crucifix and it will emit an ear-piercing screech. A recent survey reveals that 1 out of 3 clergy in Britain have been attacked on church grounds. The survey didn't say who the attackers seem to be. Along with such novelty items, there comes a byproduct, stress, holiday stress, huh? Fear not, I found the remedy. The official holiday stress reduction diet. For breakfast, half a grapefruit, a slice of whole wheat toast, 6 ounces skim milk. For lunch, 4 ounces lean broiled chicken, 1 cup steamed spinach, 1 cup of herb tea, and 1 Oreo. Mid-afternoon, the rest of the Oreos in the box, plus a pint of Rocky Road ice cream. Dinner, 2 loaves of garlic bread, a large pitcher of Pepsi, a large pizza with sausage, mushrooms, and cheese, and 3 Snickers bars. Late evening, 1 frozen Sara Lee cheesecake, which you eat directly out of the freezer. And remember, stressed spelled backwards is desserts. It was Pascal who wrote, "We are never fully living, rather we are always hoping to live." There is something in us that always yearns for more, believing that the way things are is not the way things have to be. George Eliot wrote, "We can never give up longing while we are alive. There are certain things we feel to be beautiful and good, and we must hunger for them. We must hunger for the beautiful and good." Experts, by the way, have counted exactly how many desires there are. Turns out there are 16, according to some scholar at Ohio State University. And his list includes independence, power, food, companionship, status, goes on. And you can make your own list. The point is, desire goes with the human condition. Desire is potential energy. It's like a battery, a capacitor. Desire is good news much of the time. It can also be bad news when compulsive desires take over. So today I'd like to invite you to consider a simple roadmap of desire, and I've invited Pat and Eva and Dave and Jamie and others to just help distribute this. It'll take just a half a minute or so. And while this is going around, I want to offer the punchline right up front. Here's the punchline. Don't remember anything else. This is it. Our problem is not that there are too many desires. The problem is that we desire too little. That is, we are easily benumbed by habit and routine. We might say, "I've been there, I've done that, I bought the t-shirt, what else is there?" Right. But see, if all we have to show is collections of trinkets, t-shirts, and other impersonal objects, instead of living stories and memories and hopes and one-of-a-kind events, what will inspire our souls? That's what I want to get to. Without something that inspires the soul, we may be left with mountains of sadness and wondering, is that all? So have a look at this diagram and consider the inside and that little cartoon labeled Desires, the Game of Life. And it shows some lines, arrows, circles, and boxes, and so forth. And you'll notice 2 clockwise loops. Each loop begins on the left side with something labeled desires. Yep, that's essential. And each path eventually leads back to desires, because desire is the basic human condition. Whether there are 16 or 1600, desire is the capacitor, the battery of our lives. And notice there are 2 circuits. There's an outer loop in dashed lines and an inner loop in solid lines. Let's consider the outer loop. Start with desires on the left. Regardless of how many desires there are, desires will soon encounter the enticements of marketing. Marketing is the voice that says, look what could be yours, two brand new parents or whatever. And enticements are not going to go away. Marketing is also part of the human condition. Marketing goes at least as far back as Jacob and Esau, when Esau pulled the wool literally over the eyes of his blind old father Isaac. Marketing goes way back. It goes with the territory. But then it comes a decision point, a choice insofar as how to respond to the allures of marketing and enticements. The choice is governed not by the cleverness of marketers. It's grounded rather in our spiritual worldview. If our worldview is based on scarcity, then most often we may gravitate to the dashed outer loop. And in this outer loop, the refrain is, I don't have enough. It's not right. I'm not good enough, not smart enough, not clever enough. We tried that and it didn't work. We don't have enough money for that. There's never enough time or money or energy or resources. This is the loop of scarcity. It's fed by despair. And amidst despair, those who feel trapped in the outer loop may seek some false idols of fulfillment. Sure, some trinkets along the way may give a temporary high, a feeling, wow, that really was great. I really needed that Black and Decker salad shooter or whatever the heck it was. Yes, I needed that. And such a high may come from any number of stimulants. Gambling, shopping, infidelity, alcohol, stealing, work addiction. I mean, any number of distractions. But the problem is that more often than not, such stimulants only serve to numb the pain of blandness and routine and boredom. At least get me out of my boredom, Now consider the lower right-hand corner of the diagram. Amidst such a temporary high, a temporary fix, there are a couple of options. One path pointing to the left is self-deception. And this is the voice that says, what problem? I can quit anytime I want. I'm not hooked. I can quit. I'm not hooked on blank, fill in the blank. Self-deception is often the first response to those in the outer loop. And there's another option, which leads to sadness and melancholy and despair. And after a while, sober awareness hits, asking, is that all? Is that really all? I got what I thought I wanted. Is that all? So the pacemaker of this outer loop is a spiritual worldview grounded in scarcity. The path leads some into sadness and melancholy, and that's why there are going to be half-price sales on December 26th to get folks beyond the melancholy of Christmas afternoon and back to desires. This is not to be regretted, not necessarily. But there's a second, quite different pathway leading, again, back through desires, an inner loop showed by the solid line, and it also traverses marketing. That's part of the game. But this path is grounded not in a presumption of scarcity, but one of abundance. The traveler who sees their life as already overflowing will mirror that abundance in their generosity. Moreover, if that person is clearly well differentiated with this I believe, these are my values, this is where I'm going kinds of statements. With such clear differentiation, then it won't matter whether their generosity leads to a measurable benefit, a measurable outcome. Because there's no ego attachment to their generosity. No need to be needed. No need for results. Gratitude based on generosity is so often unspoken. And notice, by the way, that gratitude, in its fullness, it doesn't dead end someplace because it goes back into desires. The loops will return to desires. And in a way, that's good news. But in this inner loop, the journey involves sharing one's abundance. For in such sharing, one is sustained again and again. Now, on the back cover, I've scribbled some suggested interpretations of my little cartoon. And by the way, just throw this away. I'm more interested in you making up your own cartoon. I would like to know what your landscapes of desire look like. But I've suggested, for instance, that all roads will lead back to desire, because this is the catalyst of our life energy. Marketing is also ever-present. But there are two distinct responses to desire. One is grounded in scarcity, self-deception, and sadness. The other is grounded in abundance, generosity, and gratitude. Now, there are, at least in my experiences, at least a couple of crossover points, crossover opportunities between the outer and inner loops. And these are, number one, reassessing one's spiritual worldview, scarcity or abundance. And number two, strengthening one's capacity toward healthy differentiation. This is who I am. This is what I believe. These are my values. So my challenge is, what are your landscapes like? What are the enticements? What are the dead ends? What are the crossovers? Is there a third or a fourth loop or a Moebius strip or something, a crazy geometry? Regardless of your landscapes, how you might sketch it, I would predict at least a couple of things. I would predict that you will encounter a couple of decision points. One of these would be your decision as to whether your life's pacemaker is scarcity or abundance. And the second would be how well grounded you are insofar as needing to be needed and needing to have results. Friends, the problem with desire is not that we desire too much, it's that we desire too little. When we desire too little or can't say what it is that we truly want, that's when attitudes of, well, whatever, creep in. Bland indifference, the bland leading the bland. When we desire too little, that is when unexamined desires and compulsions can slip in, and we gravitate to that outer loop of false wants. Remember the Sufi mystic Rumi, who wrote, "You must ask for what you really want. Don't go back to sleep. You must ask for what it is you really want. Can't read your minds. Ask, just ask for what you really want." That is, give clarity and focus to your yearnings. Otherwise, unhealthy desires just may creep in. Back to where we started. Thou shalt not covet. I want to close by suggesting five little signposts as you and I navigate through these alluring landscapes. Signpost one, the cosmos does not make junk. Our creation is fundamentally good, so walk gently on this earth. The summit in Paris is concluding, and we just may walk somewhat more gently on this earth. Signpost number two, people are precious. So be gentle with one another, because none of us can presume what it's like to be another or to have their desires. So honor their desires. Signpost three, be real gentle with yourself and aspire to be more caring and joyful in all the gifts that you bring to the human table. Signpost four, doing good is not about keeping score, and so try being good for nothing. That is, be good for its own sake, especially when no one is watching. That's the main responsibility of ministers, is to be good for nothing. And signpost 5, if you really do need to keep score, and some of us may need to, then try to be just a little bit kinder than is fair, necessary, or expected. So do unto others 20% more than you would have them do unto you. That's a better golden rule. And that 20% is to correct for subjective error. Remember, 20% more than what would be fair. It's not fair. It's not a level playing field. 20% more. Once upon a time on a Christmas Eve, in an unheated, sparsely furnished attic in the Latin Quarter of Paris, a down-and-out bohemian artist named Rodolfo held up a candle. You know the story. He encounters Mimi in the darkness. A draft of wind blows out the candle. And in the cold and darkness, Rodolfo's hand touches Mimi's. And so he warms her tiny frozen hand. Che gelida manina, such a tender hand. And at that point, Rodolfo begins to tell Mimi about his life and his dreams as a poet. On this Christmas Eve, people on the streets, far down below, they are busily rendering unto Caesar all the things that are Caesar's. But up in this attic, Rodolfo proclaims to Mimi that all the riches of life dwell not in ambitions of material wealth, nor even in the bright lights of fame and acclaim. They emerge rather in darkened attics, where lower crust bohemian folks, such as they, can pay attention to one another, hold one another's hands, and pay attention to that which truly endures. So Rodolfo sings to Mimi, Chi son? Sono un poeta. Who am I? I'm a poet. Che cosa faccio scrivo? What do? I write. E come vivo? Vivo. And how do I live? I live. Per sogni e per chimera e per castelli in avia, l'anima o milionaria. In dreams and in fantasies and in castles in the air, I am a millionaire in spirit. L'anima o milionaria. In closing, please join with me in a unison affirmation. The words are printed in your order of service. If, as Herod, we fill our lives with things and again things, if we must fill every moment with action, when will we have time to make the long, slow journey across the burning desert? As do the Magi.